Hello and welcome to the Hooks Baseball Podcast, Episode 9. My name is Dan Reiner and we've got a great show lined up for you this week. Our special guests include Jimmy Van Ostrand, a Hooks alum and current Major League Mental Performance Coach for the Toronto Blue Jays, Sarita Porter, Area Director for Special Olympics Texas, and Bill Overton, a Special Olympics athlete who also works at Whataburger Field. We start things off with Hooks broadcaster Dominic Catronio. Dominic spent the 2019 season with Corpus Christi after coming over from the High A Carolina League with the Kinston, now Down East, Wood Ducks. He also spent time with the Orem Owls in 2017, and prior to that was in the Cape Cod League. Dominic, how is it going?
It's going well, man. It's hot in Arizona. How are you?
It's hot here too, man, and you know that. But you know, I'm enjoying the what you would call cooler weather down here, which is peak summer in most of the rest of the country. But for you and I, you know, it's around the 80 to 90 degree mark right now, and you know, that's nice enough to still, you know, go for a run down by the bayfront and kind of enjoy yourself outside before it gets too unbearably hot to be outside for longer than about 10-15 minutes.
Of course. And here we've been kind of holding steady 95 to 100 degrees. We had a blip at the end of April, already went up to 106 at the end of April, but then it came back down. But it's just like, all right, summer came early this year, guys. So luckily tomorrow will only be 91 and definitely be teeing it up. But it's May in Arizona. It's dry. It's sunny every day. I can't complain.
So you mentioned teeing it up. And I think one of the first things when you introduce yourself, I think you say, "Hi, I'm Dominic Catronio. Do you golf? Do you like golf?"
Pretty much. It's like Michael Jordan in The Last Dance, like giving a set of clubs to Scottie Pippen because he wanted to take his money. That's basically what I want to do with anyone I meet. Like, "Hey, do you want to play some golf? We're going to go on Saturday. I've got some clubs you can borrow. Let's play. We're going to play $20 a hole. Sound good?"
Right. You know, just it doesn't matter if they're your best friend or if you just met him. You are willing to play golf with that person.
Yeah, exactly. And everyone, I loved Last Dance and how much golf really made it in there for Michael. And he actually owns his own course now down in Florida. And it's just the dude plays, you know, 54 holes, which is three rounds a day. It's insane.
So obviously you would prefer to be here in Texas and working at a baseball field, but you're semi-fortunate at least to be working at a golf course. I mean, in Arizona, one of the few industries that was allowed to remain open since the beginning of this pandemic was golf courses. I believe here in Texas as well, but you stayed home in Arizona through the winter. And so you at least had that. Is that kind of what you've been doing with your days, you know, working in the pro shop and getting out onto the tees like in the afternoon?
Golf is the perfect social distancing sport. You can stay 400 yards away from the nearest group. You don't have to stay anywhere near someone you don't know. You literally don't have to touch anything that isn't yours. Like, and everything you do touch can be sanitized. So it's a pretty easy sport to figure out. And I'll give Arizona credit. We're kind of one of the first ones to say, "Here's what we're doing for our golf courses." And then other states realized, "Oh, well, we can do that too." And it became a form of sport and recreation for residents and everyone. And I'm a big advocate for mental health. And this is such a huge thing to have. Get outdoors, enjoy some fresh air, you know, work up a little sweat too. Just, you know, make sure to get out of the house and enjoy something. And I think golf's the perfect way to do it.
So you've seen behind the scenes, as you just explained, golf is kind of a one-man sport. You know, obviously you play in groups and, but your clubs are your own and your ball is your own. But I guess baseball is kind of similar in that way. You know, every guy has their own bat. The ball does get passed around a bit. So I'm curious about your opinion as a sports guy, a baseball guy, and you know, someone who's been working in golf and sports through this whole thing. Is do you see a possibility where, you know, with baseball that it could come back this year from your perspective?
I absolutely believe it should come back this year, and I read the piece by The Athletic by Evan Drellich and Ken Rosenthal on that. Hey, here's all the new rules that baseball is going to have to adapt. No spitting, no new baseball and all this. I'm like, But if we're going to be testing these guys 24/7 and, you know, making sure they don't have it and they're on top of things, and why is there a worry if they're the only ones in the stadium and they've already been tested that they don't have it? And the baseball, I don't understand why the game has to be different if it's confirmed that everybody inside the building is okay. And hence, I read the plan in that if a player does get a positive, they're immediately brought to a place where he can get a new double check on the positive test, and then they go into quarantine, and then they immediately test the whole team. And I really think that's a great plan, and how they already have something in place if a player does get contracted with it. But my point is, you don't play the game unless everyone's clean, you know? So I think the game can go on pretty normal. How soon can we get fans is, I think, the burning question, which we will never really have an answer for anytime soon, that is to say. But we're all, you know, holding our breath and keeping our fingers and toes crossed.
When this all kicked off, when baseball went dark, we were at spring training together. And that was kind of the tail end of a string of games for you that I don't know if any broadcaster has ever touched. You were all over the place on both coasts. And I think you hit up pretty much all of the AL West. You did games for the Astros, the A's, and the Rangers. So, you know, before everything shut down, can you just walk us through your spring training experience that you had everywhere that you were, and how you even came upon those opportunities?
Yeah, it even actually started back in February. And the way it all worked out was through good friend Darren Sutton, who's the son of Don Sutton and a voice on Pac-12 Networks and Perfect Game and on Sirius XM Radio, had reached out to me this past offseason knowing I was in Arizona, asking me if I was interested in doing the Arizona Fall League Rising Stars game. Did that in October. Very lucky to do that, thanks to Darren. Then you fast forward. He calls me again in January. Got a couple more opportunities for you. I got to do the MLB4 college baseball tournament here in Arizona, in which Vanderbilt, Michigan, UConn, and Cal Poly played a round robin of a weekend of baseball here in the Valley. And I got to call two of the games. I got to call Vanderbilt versus UConn, and then Cal Poly versus Michigan. And in the Vanderbilt game, I got to see Kumar Rocker. So that was awesome. Next year's maybe number one pick. But then you fast forward. So that's Valentine's Day weekend in February. And I was also preparing to do the World Baseball Classic qualifiers in March. And that was planned to be right when I got back from West Palm Beach. So I was kind of the busiest broadcaster in America, aside from like Jim Nantz, you know, because he goes from March Madness to the Masters. But I got to do MLB4 in Valentine's Day weekend. Then I got to do three Rangers games, my former employer with the Down East Wood Ducks. Three Rangers games out in the West Valley at the end of February. Then the following week, I did four A's games, including one with my dad. For those who don't know, my dad is the voice of the Oakland A's, Vince Cotroneo, former voice of the Houston Astros from 1991 through 1996. And then I called that game Thursday, that last game of the A's Thursday. I work my job at the golf shop, and I fly out to West Palm on Sunday. And I spend 3 days in West Palm calling games each day. And Wednesday night, you and I are together when the world stopped turning. It was crazy. Like, we were together at dinner, and we get the alert. Rudy Gobert has tested positive for COVID-19. And we all kind of looked around. We were with our soon-to-be colleagues with Corpus Christi at the time, and like, is this going to affect us? And then I was already flying out the next morning because that was a scheduled off day, and I was preparing to make my television debut that weekend on Pac-12 Networks for University of Arizona hosting Oregon State baseball down in Tucson. While I was in the air, everything canceled. So I literally picked the worst day in the world to fly. I got off the plane and I had about 10 missed calls. And it was just kind of like, well, yeah, I guess it will affect us. And needless to say, the games that weekend got canceled. The WBC qualifier the next week got canceled. And yeah, luckily I didn't sign any leases or had already moved in to be sitting doing nothing. So asked my parents, hey, how's my room looking? So yeah, that's what I've been doing in the meantime.
It is super surreal as we get for, I mean, it obviously feels like so long ago, but in reality, it was only 2 months ago that happened. But for us to really just be in the like, I remember the exact moment that you mentioned, just being at that dinner table. We all get the alert on our phones, Twitter or ESPN alert or whatever it was, and it was like, what is happening? You know, because we had been in an Astros spring training game earlier that day, and everything was, for the most part, still pretty normal. And then in an instant, everything shut down, and it's kind of like a where were you moment. And we have such a distinct memory of, you know, being in such a unique place and such a unique situation. Last year, I saw you every game, your preparation, spending hours, and you're an analytically driven broadcaster, which is kind of that new age of broadcasting, which we haven't really seen, I don't think, you know, peek out of its shell as much as you would expect, you know, with some of the analytically driven writers that you see, because I think it's a little harder to translate into broadcasting, you know, in the flow of a baseball game. So what is your approach when you get it to the ballpark at whatever it is, 1 o'clock for a 7 o'clock game, and, you know, taking those notes and actually applying them to a baseball game?
First of all, subscribe to fangraphs.com, y'all. That's the best. I'm on it every day. And all the folks over there, the writers, I read them every day. The charts, the graphs, everything. FanGraphs is, lo and behold, the number one thing I use. And they're completely fan-supported, reader-supported. So I really love what they do and everything that they write about. And they have a ton of minor league and prospect coverage on it. So the crew over there, I've got to know a few of them, and they're great, great people. But to give you the routine, really, it's like get there at 1. Usually the lineups are in by then, maybe wait on the visitors kind of thing. But first thing first, write down the lineups. You know, I like to write the lineups first, because if there are any changes, you know, it's not like you're writing a whole new lineup. Just bust out the whiteout. And Dan, I know you can attest how much whiteout I use, not just because of lineup changes, just because I suck at writing. You know, I just make typos and mistakes. But I go down to the clubhouse, go say hi to the guys, go say hi to Omar, go say hi to you know, whoever I need to talk to about last night's game, whatever, talk to those guys for a few minutes, talk to the coaches, talk to whoever it may be, whoever wants to listen. And 9 times out of 10, that was Brett Adcock last season. But it was kind of fun because, you know, the guys understand my job. They understand Mike's job, and that, look, we're going to hang out and talk about, oh man, that was a nasty slider that you saw last night on 1-2. And while that's a natural conversation, he'd be like, you know, that could be something I can slip into the broadcast. And he said, I can say, yeah, he struck out on that 1-2 slider last night. And, you know, he said, man, I was thinking slider was coming and he just beat me. And that little bit is, I think, adds some credibility to a broadcast. But when it comes to the analytics, I really think that, especially Astros fans and fans who are listening to our broadcasts, understand this stuff. And they want to understand it in a digestible way, like you said, in that some of these numbers people freak out because of the acronyms, but they're really pretty simple to understand. Like, my favorite stat is OPS plus to explain to people. It factors in the ballpark. So you can grade like a Nolan Arenado against, for instance, a Matt Chapman offensively. You know, you go two polar opposites of type of ballpark they play in. Coors Field, the Oakland Coliseum. Hitter's paradise, pitcher's paradise. And you can level them off on one stat on their offensive output on a grade of 0 to 100. Everybody understands 0 to 100. If you're above 100, you're above average. If you're below 100, you're below average. And then you see Mike Trout's numbers and you're like, what the heck? This guy is so good. So that's what I love about analytics, in that they do, FanGraphs does have a lot of these advanced stats, swinging strike rate, OPS plus, weighted ERA, expected on base, things like that, that can really help understand, look, here's why this guy is better than your basic average homers RBI says. And that's what not necessarily every player development guy in an organization is looking at, but they're looking at even deeper than that. How is he performing on 2-0 counts? How is he performing on pitches outside of the zone? And I want to look at it from a digestible, easy listener standpoint, saying, hey, look, Enoli Paredes has one of the best swinging strike rates in all of minor league baseball. Nobody can touch his slider. That's pretty easy to understand. But when you say he's got a 15% swinging strike rate. Some folks are like, wait, what? No, that means like basically 1 in 8 times he's going to get a swing and miss.
I'm curious to know what your favorite memory last year was at Whataburger Field, or maybe it was on the road, one of the few road trips that you took, being able to call these higher prospects, because you know the Hooks obviously had a handful of the Astros' top prospects, whether it was Abraham Toro or Christian Javier or Forrest Whitley towards the end of the year. Was there any moment or memory that you had? You had some great, you know, walk-off calls. Is there anything that stood out most to you?
Man, the first thing that comes to my mind when you ask that about favorite memory at Whataburger Field has to be, what was it, 20 strikeouts, 21 strikeouts between Brian Abreu and Christian Javier against Midland. Like, it was insane, and we needed every single one of those strikeouts. It was incredible game, pitcher's duel. Like, it was like a 2-1 final or something like that. And the post game is what sticks out, because as fans know, I go down to the field, we do the post game interview on the Jumbotron and everything. And when you have that job, you got to have quick reflexes, man, because especially with that team last year, Enoli Paredes, Johan Ramirez, man, those guys were troublemakers with me. And even Grandon Getzman a little bit too. G was, man, I love that kid. He was such a fun guy to, you know, keep an eye on, if you will. If I'm talking to somebody else, I know someone's coming with the water cooler. I just need to make sure I get out of the way. And that's the awesome shot. Shout out Alex Sanchez getting the shot of, as I'm interviewing Abreu, who speaks great English. Christian was still working on it, but he actually answered in English, by the way. That was awesome. And Brian doesn't see it because the cooler's coming from behind him. And I see it. So shout out to Johan. Thanks for doing that. I jump out of the way. Brian has no idea it's coming. Nails Brian, full cooler of Gatorade. And Christian, who's to my left, Brian's right, is just sitting there laughing like, ha, he got you. And Enoli coming behind me and nails Christian. And it was absolutely perfect. I didn't get a drop on me. And it was my favorite celebration all season. I like that way better than the walk-offs. And the fact that these guys loved each other, man. And it was a really cool team to look back on. And I got the chance to talk to Brian Abreu and Abraham Toro in September last year. When I went up to an A's Astros game and talked to Brian a little bit when he had gone back up for a 40-man, and talked to Abraham after the no-hitter with Justin Verlander getting the final out, and the where the bleep is Toro, you know, like all that stuff. That's stuff that's going to stick with me for a long time from that all started from Whataburger Field.
Right. And I mean, that's one of the great parts about being a minor league broadcaster, especially at this level, is that, you know, you have the opportunity to be that on-field guy. When you get to the majors, that's the Julia Morales of the world. You know, her job is to get down there, but you know she doesn't necessarily have to scramble down from the broadcast booth like you do, just in case something happens, like a walk-off or, you know, a big performance like that right out of the broadcast booth, and then run back upstairs to host the post-game show. I think it's a cool behind-the-scenes thing that maybe people don't get to see or appreciate as much. You know, for you as the number two broadcaster for the Hooks, it's kind of what you may say is a stepping stone to try to get to that next level, or maybe, you know, that full-time job, as we saw Sam Levitt do. He was the broadcaster before you, who's now the number one in Amarillo. So you're always aspiring to do something bigger, obviously, as a broadcaster, and you see that anywhere you go across the country, whether it's college, whether it's professional, you're always looking for gigs. And it's kind of one of those unique jobs where you are almost your own contractor, right? You're trying to get your voice heard in as many places as possible.
Exactly. And I know what the grind is like. My dad spent 7 years in the minors, and you know, I'm here getting ready, hopefully, if this season begins, my fifth season in the minors. So, you know, trying to work our way up. And now my dad's parlayed that into, shoot, what is it now? It would be this would be his 27th season in the bigs. So I understand what needs to go into it. And this stuff doesn't happen fast. And I put that lightly because, look, it's a dream job. Everybody wants this job. So being able to have your head on that. I mean, look at Matt Hicks, man. Like, he is one of the nicest guys in the world. How many years he spent in Corpus, he, you know, and finally gets his break with the Texas Rangers, you know, and the irony of all that too, that he spends all these years with an Astros affiliate and he goes to the Rangers, and now he gets to enjoy a brand new ballpark when the season begins. and Hixey's just awesome. And you look at Mike, I know Mike is awesome. And it's just one of those things that being surrounded by such talented individuals always is going to kind of make you bring your A game. You know, it's like, man, like, look at the list of guys that have been through here. And, you know, with Sam and Mike and Hixey and so on and so forth. And having Gene next to me, and it's just really, really cool to think, like, man, this, I'm only a few hours away from Houston. We have George Springer down here, and you feel like you're, you know, people are paying attention. You feel like, you know, this is something important, and that's what we all want to feel here in the minors.
I really appreciate you giving us some insight into, you know, your path. Best of luck with everything out in Arizona, and I wish you were here with us. You know, I really, really wish that we were playing baseball and we could hear your voice on the radio, but hopefully we'll hear you this year. And if it's not this year, hopefully it happens next year.
Just take some carry out from Vernon's for me. All right. Just take care of that for me.
I heard it was reported previously, I think, on one of our podcasts that Vernon's is actually getting a bit of a facelift. So I'm really excited. Ooh. You know, once the things open up down here in downtown Corpus Christi, that we'll be able to pop in.
I will call my Vernon's source on the one and only Amy Johnson on that. So let's see if I can figure that out.
Sounds good. All right, Dom. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Thanks, Dan. And thanks to everybody listening in Corpus. Can't wait to see you guys soon.
Hello, I'm Michael Coffin, and the Hooks Baseball Podcast continues with a fan favorite at Whataburger Field, former Hook Jimmy Van Ostrand, who is now the Blue Jays Major League Mental Performance Coach. VO, thanks for taking the time with us, man.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
Well, first off, congratulations on reaching the big leagues. You made it last year with Seattle as a mental skills coach, final year of a three-year stint with the Mariners organization. And now here you are with Toronto. It must be quite a thrill for you to work in the big leagues in your native Canada.
Yeah, it's a really exciting opportunity. You know, really looking forward to getting going with the Blue Jays. And it's been a great group of people, you know, throughout the spring, working with those guys, just starting to get connected with the players. It's been a lot of fun so far.
Did you grow up a big Blue Jays fan, being you from Vancouver? I know it was on the other coast, but still, it's got to be a thrill for you personally.
No, definitely. I mean, it is very true when they talk about it kind of being Canada's team. To the point, I joked about it with a bunch of my buddies in Seattle last year. The only time I saw them was when the Blue Jays came into town on the road. But yeah, the early 90s, when the Jays were doing so well and winning the back-to-back World Series, there was definitely when I was kind of falling in love with the game. And so it's really cool. You know, I had back-to-back Halloweens where I was dressed up as Paul Molitor and awesome. Pat Borders. And so it's been really cool to get connected with the team there. And, you know, obviously it's got a special meaning to Canada and to the country.
Well, it's a crazy time right now for the world, obviously. Can you tell us how you're doing personally? Where are you talking to us from right now?
Yeah, I'm out in Peoria, Arizona right now, so just hanging out here, trying to stay in touch with the staff and the players and everything like that, trying to stay up to date on what's developing and how we can best support our guys. But it is a challenging time. You know, I think it's this circumstance leads to different challenges and different struggles for everybody, but just trying to make the best of it. Find positive things to hang our hat on, find ways to get better, and hopefully we're back to baseball soon.
Chatting with former Hook Jimmy Van Ostrand, the Blue Jays Major League Mental Performance Coach. Can you, VO, can you describe your directives from the Blue Jays and your personal objectives with this role, and how do you want to affect the Blue Jays as a ball club?
Yeah, really. I mean, I think one of the simplest ways to put it is, you know, my job is to help guys focus on the right things at the right time. So from a mental standpoint, if we're doing that more often and doing that at a higher level, that's kind of what it's all about and what we're trying to do. It's very collaborative in nature. You know, that's one of the cool things about my time, both with the Mariners and with the Blue Jays now. You know, is working closely with the people in player development, the on-field personnel, as well as, you know, strength and conditioning personnel, ATCs, really everybody in kind of collaborating and trying to help the player. And they're the ones that do the work. You know, it's all about them between the lines and what they can do on the field when it's game time. And we're all there to support them in any way we can.
VO played 8 seasons in the minors, including a bulk of time with the Hooks. In fact, is the Hooks career RBI leader an organizational all-star for the Astros in 2011. He was an eighth-round pick of Houston in 2006 out of Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, and then got his master's in psychology from Cal Southern University. VO, what's your approach with these guys, with the Blue Jays? Do you go to them? Do they reach out to you? Is there a balance in terms of how you start that relationship?
Yeah, I think it just kind of evolves over time. But to start out with, a lot is just getting to know the people first and what they're trying to do and what they're all about and figure out if there's any ways that I can help them out. Another thing, I mean, we've got a really good, we're very fortunate that we have a pretty built out mental performance team. So a lot of them that have been there with the organization for a few years are familiar with some of the things that that former people have provided. And so just trying to keep a streamline going as far as making sure that anything they like is still available to them. And then over time, you know, we just start tackling things as they come. Sometimes that might be me coming to them. Sometimes it's them coming to me. Sometimes it's through the coaches. And so there's a lot of different ways that it can kind of grow and take form. But for the most part, just focusing on relationships to start, getting to know the people, getting to know how I can help, and then we go from there.
When baseball fans think of the Blue Jays, they think of that young core, Biggio, Bichette, Gurriel, Guerrero. Does that affect your approach at all, knowing that you have a young team, a young core of players?
I think just the way that it affects any team, you know, you're always going to be made up of a certain group of guys, and every team has its own sort of character and individual people within the team. And really you're just trying to collectively achieve as much as possible for that group and then also help the individuals on that team do the things that they want to do and be great at what they want to be great at. So for guys that don't have as much time in the league or trying to establish themselves in the league, they got different concerns from players that have been around a long time and are trying to, you know, extend their career or do other things of that nature. So really it's just about trying to meet everybody where they're at, help them work towards what they're wanting to work towards, at the same time as us as a group are kind of putting it all together and trying to do special things as a team.
Well, this is a really challenging time for you and your staff as you get ready for the 2020 season. We hopefully that's coming up very soon. What are some of the points of emphasis that you're focusing on, some of the stuff that you're reading about how to help these guys after they've been in quarantine for so long?
Yeah, it's hard. We got to the point where we were kind of really close to getting rolling and getting going. You had opening day just sitting there right on the horizon, and all of a sudden that changes and changes very dramatically. So I think at first it's just kind of recalibrating and figuring out, you know, what is this going on? What's it going to look like and what can we do about it? And now that we're hopefully getting a little bit closer to moving in a positive direction, it's like, okay, where are we? What do we need to do to be ready? And how do we go about doing those things? Some of the biggest stuff that we've just been talking about with the guys really is just they're prepared for these types of things, right? They have become really successful baseball players by overcoming different types of adversity, by dealing with tough training circumstances, by being able to make the best of things when it is a tough situation. So kind of talking about the things that they are prepared to handle this situation. It might not be ideal. It might not be what any of us want. It isn't what any of us want, but we can still handle it as effectively as possible. So trying to keep things within their control, figure out what we can do to get better or maximize whatever our predicament is that we're in. And then as we look to get going again, you know, start getting excited about it, start getting ready to play and get back to doing the things that these guys love to do.
Speaking with Jimmy Van Ostrand, the Blue Jays Major League Mental Performance Coach, former Hook. VO, can you take us through how you came to this avenue of the game, the mental side?
Yeah, for sure. I really got very fortunate. Andy McKay, who is the Director of Player Development for the Seattle Mariners, he was a manager for me in summer ball back in college baseball in 2004, I guess, with the Anchorage Glacier Pilots. And so we had a kind of pre-existing relationship, had always kept in touch. And Andy, throughout his career, had kind of gone on. He'd been coaching in college at Sac City College and then went to the Colorado Rockies as a mental skills coach there before taking over the job with the Mariners. And he kind of approached me with the idea about getting into the mental skills arena and being able to combine kind of the playing background with some of the academic knowledge and put that all together. And it made a lot of sense to me. It was something that really excited me. I'd never thought about it personally before, but it had always been an area that really interested me. And with him, kind of the way he envisioned it or set the opportunity out there for me, it made a lot of sense. So that's when I started taking classes again and going back to school and moving down that path.
Seems like baseball players are the perfect focus group for how you handle adversity and how you battle mental anguish and just kind of getting over those hurdles that pop up every day before every at bat, before every single pitch. Were you surprised by anything that you learned in school when you went back to school to get your master's that maybe you didn't experience or that said, man, if I would have thought about that during my days with the Hooks, this you know, I would have had an easier time?
Yeah, there was a lot there, actually. I mean, the biggest thing is that all these things that you figure out or learn through basically like trial and failure and just trying to essentially figure out the best solution to a given problem. There were all these different, you know, theories and methods and tests and research that have been done behind a lot of these different things. So, for me, the experiences were very valuable for myself, but understanding these bigger frameworks and how to kind of organize some of these thoughts and what they might be attributed to and skills that you can practice and focus on to improve some of these abilities were really, really helpful. And I think that that is continuing to serve me and stuff that I'm continuing trying to learn a lot about so that I can help our guys out as much as possible.
I read a compelling story in a newspaper about a conversation you had with former Hooks manager, then he was hitting coach, Keith Bodie, and I think it was in 2009. Do you remember this story? Can you tell me about that conversation and how it affected you and your path to where you are now?
Yeah, totally. I mean, basically the short version of it is wasn't playing well. I just wasn't being the person that, you know, Bodie had accustomed to be seen at the field and my teammates had become accustomed to seeing at the field. And I wasn't really being the best version of myself. And that had to do with my performance. That was why I was acting that way, but it didn't need to be a reason that I was acting that way. That wasn't an excuse. You know, I was letting my performance affect the person. And what he highlighted to me was you bring a lot more to this team than just your numbers that you put up during a game. You help other guys compete well. You help other guys stay in a good mood and stay level and do all these different things. And he essentially said, you're not doing any of these things. Right now, you're as valuable as the numbers on the back of your baseball card, and the back of your baseball card over the last month isn't very good. If you go back to being that good person and that good teammate that we all love about you, then honestly, you're a lot more valuable than the back of your baseball card says, and we can live with this. But if you don't, then you either got to get those numbers up or you're completely useless. And it's, so it was really good and it was really impactful, obviously for me to hear that message, but it's an important one. You know, we all can get taken out of, you know, being essentially who we want to be at times because things can be frustrating or things can be challenging or we're having difficult things to deal with. But at the end of the day, we can only control so much. And, you know, I wanted to play well. I was putting in the work to try and play well and eventually, you know, started playing well again. But it's so important for me in that was one of those things that, you know, luckily I had someone like Bodie to help me learn that is to get better, you know, over time at being the same dude and being a positive effect on people, regardless of how things might be going or how you want to be doing in your own life. Because we all have more importance than just the impact we have on ourselves.
Well, now that you've made that transition to being a coach and now a big league coach, how often do you reflect on some of the previous managers or hitting coaches or whomever that you've encountered in the game that have made it easier for you personally? How often have you thought about their tactics and how they reach guys?
A lot. I mean, I'm really just the sum of the things that I've learned and the people I've been around. I mean, I think that's one thing that I feel very fortunate is that I've been around a lot of good people, and they've had a lot of knowledge that I've been able to take. And Jim Pankowitz was my manager in high A ball when I was in Salem, and he was with the Mariners organization when I came back and started working with him, and he was awesome when I first was starting the coaching side of things. And there've been tons of people that I still currently reach out to on a, you know, weekly, monthly, couple times a year basis to pick their brain and get better at things. And I think that's what it's all about. You know, you learn by doing, you learn by listening, you learn by paying attention, and you try and keep being better. And the really cool thing about what I get to do right now is I'm just trying to help people perform really well at something that they love to do and something that a lot of people care about. And being able to do that with a group of people, you know, a staff with the Blue Jays and everybody that's bought in is a lot of fun. It's a dream.
Focusing in on your time in Corpus Christi, VO, any memories or elements of your time in the Sparkling City or playing at Whataburger Field that stand out?
Yeah, I mean, just how fun it was coming into the park every day. I mean, it's such a gorgeous stadium. You know, the fans were always there supporting us. The small handful of fans that, you know, were so impactful. I was lucky to have a host family that took care of me, Shelly and Coon Bram, and they were awesome. You know, they looked after me for one of the seasons, and that was great. Still get some texts from them and shoot that back and forth every once in a while.
Any memories about traveling in the Texas League that maybe you look back at every now and again?
I mean, the most ridiculous one, and I might exaggerate this by
Please
now,
do.
but who knows? I remember we were playing in Springfield, and it was the one time that year when we didn't have an off day on the
back end of
the drive home. So we know this coming in, and we've got a night game in Springfield and then a night game the next day in Corpus. And so we're playing in Springfield, and of course the game goes extra innings. And I think we end up going, it wasn't crazy, but we ended up playing like 11 innings or something. And we finally got on the bus, I want to say at like midnight or 1 o'clock or something like that. And so then it was...
A 2 p.m. arrival in Corpus.
Yeah. So we get back at about 2 or 3 p.m. And at this point, you're like, this is just ridiculous. Like there's no way, like this is just a mess. Like, what are we going to do? Let's take a little nap or do something. We kind of canceled batting practice, canceled all that stuff, just said, let's go. But we sort of got this feeling like, you know what, this is so ridiculous. Like, I think this is going to work out. Like, this is just so absurd, so stupid. We're going to find a way and we're going to win this game. And then I want to say the top of the first inning happened and we probably gave up like 4 runs and it just went downhill from there. We just got killed.
So there went your intuition.
Yeah, it was just, that was not correct. We just got dominated. But I remember that one. You know, that was a little ridiculous. But yeah, Midland was awesome. I mean, you kind of had a fast infield surface and a place with not huge dimensions and just always kind of felt good there. You know, there's different parks at different people for whatever reason you feel pretty good in, and always saw the ball pretty well there. And yeah, the onion rings from Clear Springs Cafe, I can't thank them enough.
Well, 2011 was a big year for you in many ways. First with the Hooks, an all-star in the Astros system. You hit .306 with 35 extra base hits and worked 43 walks against something like 50 strikeouts. So a tremendous year for you with the Hooks, but also some brief tenures from Jose Altuve, J.D. Martinez. They, along with Jimmy Paredes, went directly up to the Astros. Did you have an idea about the ceiling for a guy like Altuve or even JD, although JD had more of a circuitous route to where he is now?
I'd say yes and no. I mean, both of them, I thought they were really, really special. Jose, just his personality, like the infectious personality, the willingness to compete, the willingness to hold other people accountable, and the ability to go out and get after it every single day, was really, really impressive. And then his just ability to find the barrel is unbelievable. You know, it's one of the best people that I've ever seen. And then JD too, was his kind of dedication to hitting and to the craft of that. I mean, he was meticulous with his notebooks and scouting pitchers and remembering at bats and taking care of all that kind of homework and preparation and stuff of that nature. He worked extremely hard, probably one of the hardest working players that I've ever been around. And so I think, you know, JD, everybody talks about the, you know, he kind of figured out his swing and then things changed and he turned it, like, that dude's a superstar because of how he goes about it and how he works. Right. The swing mechanic thing ended up being a big jump for him, but he just through work, dedication, preparation was already a big leaguer and a decent one at that. I mean, he wasn't a scrub by any means, which I feel like people sometimes writing their stories try and make him to be like, oh, he was useless. And then all of a sudden he turned into a superstar. Like he was just figuring some stuff out. His work ethic is second to none. And I think that's what makes him great. And so the swing ended up being the thing that kind of released the beast, I guess, a little bit.
But he can only get that, there through that dedication, yeah, right?
That dedication, the preparation, the commitment to being better is was really a separator for him. And that was something that he had, you know, from the second he showed up in Corpus.
VO, a decorated career for Team Canada, going from the 2008 Olympics to the 2013 World Baseball Classic. You won gold at the 2011 Pan Am Games, knocking in two runs and a 2-1 win over the U.S. in the championship bout, the first major international baseball championship in Canada's history. And from being from Vancouver, representing your country, working with likes of the Hall of Famer Larry Walker, that sounds awfully special.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, anytime you get to represent your country is really, really special and something I'll always treasure. And I was fortunate to do it on a number of occasions at some different international events. And it was every experience was unique and every experience was pretty incredible. Pan Ams in 2011 was awesome. You know, we kind of got hot at the right time. That was a unique format in that the World Cup and the Pan Am Games were back-to-back that year. So the World Cup, you were playing, I think we ended up playing like 12 or 13 games over in Europe, and we'd gotten a bronze medal over there. And then you rolled straight from that into the Pan Am Games, which ended up being another like five or six games. So it was a solid month that we were all playing together. So to be able to find a way to win that that last game was awesome and something I'll always cherish. And then obviously the spectacle of the Olympics is just incredible. I mean, the baseball for us was we lost 4 one-run games, lost 1-0 to Korea and Japan, 5-4 to the U.S. and 7-6 to Cuba. So if you win any of those, you got a chance to move on into the medal rounds. So that was tough. But
you had a big hit though, right? You had a big qualifying tournament just to get to Beijing, right?
Yeah, no, we played really well. We won the qualifying, the last chance qualifier over in Taiwan. So it was, it was awesome. And then the Olympics were incredible. I mean, I got to watch Usain Bolt break the 100-meter world record in person. Went to go see a bunch of different events in gymnastics, and I got to see, you know, badminton, which is got a special place in my upbringing. So went and watched the badminton competition. But just being around the village, you know, eating in the cafeteria and just seeing a bunch of specimens walking around all over the place, it was a really special experience.
What was it like working with Larry Walker? I think we all got a little bit of a window into his personality during his Hall of Fame. The announcement ceremony, he was wearing that SpongeBob, was it like a racing shirt or something like that? What's he like, you know, just guy to guy?
Oh, he's the best. He is absolutely the best, you know. I'll tell you a quick story here that can kind of sum him up. So we're over in Europe for that World Cup tournament, and we're having a dinner. And the way that they serve food over in Europe, or at least in this instance, was they really like to bring it out kind of course by course and you enjoy the meal. Well, we just got done playing a baseball game at night. We got to go back to the hotel and rest up, and then we have to drive somewhere else to play somewhere in the morning. So we're wanting to just eat and get out of there, right? But they're, you know, they bring out the kind of meat and cheese tray, and then they bring out some fruit. And so, like, this thing's just taking forever. And we're like, can you just bring us like some pasta and some meat and we'll get the heck out of here? but this is how it's done. And each city, it was really cool. They kind of spread you out to different cities to try and grow baseball in Europe. So that's why we're bouncing around to, but each place is doing an awesome job trying to host this really, really well. So we're on about the third course of our meal, which is just a fruit tray, and everybody's growing impatient. And Cole Armstrong, who is now a coach in the White Sox organization, decides for whatever reason that he's going to toss a grape at one of our teammates. So he fires this grape, and it hits Larry right in the eye.
Oh, Lord.
And everybody, it's just like one of those like things in a movie where everybody just screeches to a
halt. Mouth
wide
open.
Everybody's like looking for the, and it got him, right? And so his like eye is red, and it's, and Cole feels like he's like the smallest person in the world. He's like, I just, you know, knocked the eye out of a future Hall of Famer. So we're all, you know, talking smack to him and everything like that. And we end up going on with our meal, blah, 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 blah. So we get back and we get to go on the bus the next morning, and Larry walks on the bus and he's just got a huge eye patch. He just has tape and his eye is patched all over the place. And Cole looks like he is an absolute ghost.
Oh my God.
I mean, he's like, what happened? Da da da. And they had it, you know, organized with Dave Blatz, our medical guy. And so they went rolling with it for a little while. He was totally fine. But I mean, that was the type of dude he was. He took something that was like definitely annoying, definitely not what you want to be dealing with, and was, you know, just one of the guys, just wanted to use it to poke fun at somebody else and have a good time. And, you know, learn a ton about hitting from him, and also just really fun to be around and hear how he approaches the game.
Well, certainly a once in a lifetime experience getting to be around a guy like that. And, you know, you guys are both from Vancouver, so doubly cool for you. Can you briefly, you mentioned badminton earlier, can you briefly kind of take us through your experience playing sports as a youngster, as a kid, and how you came to have baseball as your career?
If there was a sport I could play, I usually like to do it. And I was pretty fortunate that my parents put me in a lot of different stuff, and I liked a lot of different stuff. And so it was kind of like basketball was sort of in the fall into the winter, and baseball was, you know, summer and spring, and badminton I sort of did throughout the whole time. It was kind of my year-round sport. I got into it. My mom was a big tennis player growing up, so we belonged to a rackets club, and she wanted me to essentially get the hand-eye coordination for tennis without getting the bad habits from a heavy racket. And so she put me in badminton lessons as a 9-year-old, and I really started liking it, started going in some tournaments, went in some tournaments, and then she told me it's time to switch to tennis, and I said I would rather not switch to tennis.
How about that?
And ended up sticking with badminton. But yeah, was heavily into badminton, basketball, and baseball, and then also played soccer through high school a bit too. Played volleyball in grade 8, 9, and 10 for my high school team. So I loved sports, you know, and I think that is something that served me well throughout my development. And, you know, baseball had always been probably the one that I loved the most and I wanted to pursue. And I was a good baseball player, but not a great baseball player. But I think learning the different things from all the different sports and developing that way made it so that when I went down to junior college after high school and got full-time, fully invested in baseball at that point, fully invested into working out, things of that nature, that I was able to really take off and kind of grow exponentially pretty quickly.
What was it about the game, B.O., that stood out to you that made baseball, you know, head above the rest?
I think it probably relates to what I'm doing now, but it's such a cool combination of thinking and strategy with also the physical ability to do things. And that kind of matched up to my skill set pretty well. I thought there's so much strategy, there's so much game within the game, on so many different levels, you know, that has always appealed to me. I love talking about it. I love being a part of it. I love competing in it, learning about it from other people, and it's something that I really, really enjoy.
B.O., before we let you go, folks can find you on Twitter at Jimmy_Van O, and I noticed that in your, I don't know what it's called, the little description, you know, above your name and all that good stuff, You have the hashtag embrace your grass. Can you tell us about that hashtag?
Absolutely. So embrace your grass came with my friend Brandon Roberts, who was my roommate in the offseason. He was in the minor leagues with the Twins at the time. And we were basically sitting there talking about our different situations. And we kind of came up with this idea that, you know, we just had to make the best of whatever our situation was. And so embrace your grass is kind of on the idea of the grass is always greener on the other side of the fence type thing. And embrace your grass is just all about, like, no matter what your situation is, it's up to you to embrace that and make the most of it. And there'll be times when you absolutely love it and it's really easy to embrace. And there'll be times when it's probably pretty hard and something you don't want. But that ability to kind of embrace those challenging situations, good situations, no matter what you're in, we felt would serve us well. And so that's something that we kind of came up with that mantra together. And it's been something that's really stuck with me. You know, it makes a lot of sense in my head. There have been a handful of other people who I've shared it with that it seems to click with them. But that's kind of what it's all about. You know, whatever situation you find yourself in, you know, make the most of it one way or another.
Vio, it sounds like you got a book in you, bud.
Not yet, but we'll see.
Well, man, I really appreciate you taking the time to do this. Jimmy Van Ostrand, former Hook and now the Blue Jays Major League Mental Performance Coach. Vio, congrats to you on your newest big league post. We're very proud of you and best of luck this year, my man.
Thanks, Michael. Always great breaking it down with you.
Hi, y'all. It's Amy Johnson here, and today I'm joined by a special guest, Sarita Porter. She's the area director for Special Olympics Texas in the greater Corpus Christi area, along with Bill Overton. He's an athlete of the adult delegation, and he also spends some time working concessions at Whataburger Field. How are y'all doing today?
We're doing great. Thanks for having us.
Great. Well, let's go ahead and jump in, and I'll let you guys both take the floor and just tell us a little bit about what y'all do with Special Olympics.
Well, Special Olympics Texas Greater Corpus Christi Area provides services for athletes with intellectual disabilities from child age up to adult age. So in order to compete, competition begins now at age 6. So from age 6 and up, they can compete in the different sports that we make readily available, such as bowling, tennis, basketball, track and field, aquatics, and we're looking to add some more this coming year, such as cheer, flag football, and hopefully eventually kayaking, as we are located near the water. But we not only provide competitions, but it's also a socialization aspect for our athletes. And also we're promoting unification. So we're promoting competitions where we have our athletes and unified partners also compete, and also influencing them to be more involved with their health as far as eating healthy, staying active, and just being a part of the community.
And Bill, what are your sports of choice? What are you the go-to athlete in?
I just volunteer to help Sarita and them make sure what they need done.
And you're going to do bowling this year though, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Awesome. Really cool. Well, a big thing right now, a transition that everyone's been doing over the last month, 2 months, is going virtual. So what have y'all had to do to, you know, make things online and accessible? You know, I read that you guys had over 300 competitions a year and you do a lot of fundraising events. So how have you transitioned that, and what are y'all doing moving forward?
We have a virtual engagement platform called So Connected, or SO Connected. And within that platform, there's three different categories. There's So Nutrition, So Active, and So Extra. So Nutrition makes readily available activities or challenges to get athletes and the community as a whole to interact with each other virtually and be more involved with their nutrition as far as knowing what healthy foods to eat. We have sport-specific skill challenges, which in fact, CC Hooks is going to be providing a sport-specific skill challenge. And we also have just physical challenges in reference to workouts. And we also stream workouts via Orange Theory during the day, Monday through Friday, for people to just be active. And through that, they can also stay connected. So through SO Connected, our participants can upload their videos of them doing the challenges. We have an e-gaming portion of SO Connected where people compete via video games or e-game of choice per week. And then there's the SO Extra, which stands for extracurricular. So there's extracurricular activity challenges also.
Cool. That's really neat. I'm sure that's been like a new thing for you. How's that transition been and the reaction from your athletes? Have they been enjoying that?
It's been really great. And not only our athletes, but also some of our sponsors and partners have been participating in the challenges as well as volunteers, not only to help our athletes stay connected and active during this time that we can't have physical competitions, but also for our community to interact with our athletes. And one way that you can access SO Connected is through our Facebook. You can go to the statewide Facebook at SOTX, or you can go to our South Texas Facebook, which is for this area. Also, you can connect with SO Connected through our website at www.sotx.org, and you'll see a banner that says SO Connected, and if you click on it, it'll take you to our SO Connected site. So that way you can access the different possibilities to interact.
That's great. So it's not just the Special Olympics athletes that can participate. It's anybody open to the public and the community.
Oh, yes. I mean, as far as for the competitions, we try to have those available for the athletes, but there's also challenges that everybody can participate in. For instance, we had a dance competition at one point. So everyone got to load videos of them doing their favorite dance, or we did a line dance. So yeah, it's fun.
That is fun. I'm definitely going to have to challenge my coworkers now and tell them to get on there. We'll start some challenges within the office. So the e-gaming portion, that was interesting. Is that a new thing y'all have done, or had you previously worked with e-gaming before?
We hadn't worked with e-gaming before. It is a portion of the SO Connected, but it's a way that our athletes, if they're not able to do some of the physical challenges or fitness challenges, they can still compete via e-gaming. And also through that, we are in the process of having an app set up so you can do it from your phone.
Cool. And then another big part of what y'all do is obviously fundraising. You know, the Special Olympics Texas, y'all are a 501c3 nonprofit. So how have you transitioned your fundraising events to virtual?
Currently, we have our virtual run going on, and you can go to our state website or Facebook and sign up for a virtual run. It's going to happen between June 1st and June 6th, so there's still time for you to sign up. I myself am going to be participating in the virtual run, and you can either do a 5K run or you can do a walk. You record yourself doing your run or your walk between June 1st and June 6th, and we're going to have a big celebration whenever we close out the virtual run. And our very own Wild 105.5, Tommy the Hacker and Angel, will be hosting that dance party celebration on June 6th when we close out the virtual run. Also, right now we have going, if you need to renew your vehicle registration, if you do it online, when you go to check out, you have the option to donate to Special Olympics Texas.
So there's plenty of options right now for folks to get involved, whether that's with your competitions and challenges or just the fundraising fun run events.
Yes, there is. We have many options.
Awesome. Well, Bill, I know you normally, you know, work at the stadium during the summer. What have you been doing while there's no baseball games?
Relaxing.
Lots of relaxing, I bet. Okay. Have you been practicing your bowling moves?
No, ma'am.
No? Okay. Well, that's good. Have you been getting involved in the virtual events that Sarita has been talking about?
Sometimes I help her. Because we had a basketball game in Kingsville. I'm just waiting for the time the baseball season start.
Yeah, I'm sure we're all anxious for those games to start back. And, you know, hopefully we'll have an answer here soon. Sarita, thank you guys. You and Bill, thanks for joining me today. I know we've sent our fans a lot of different places that they can go get involved and check out the virtual fun runs and the SO Connected. But if there's anything else you wanted to add, to send them to.
even though we're not able to compete or go see a great game at Whataburger Field, it's important for all of us to stay connected virtually and stay active.
Absolutely. Well, we're looking forward to hopefully seeing you out at Whataburger Field sooner than later.
Yes, ma'am.
Thanks, y'all.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thanks again to this week's guest. It was great to hear from Hooks broadcaster Dominic Catronio, Hooks alum and Toronto Blue Jays Major League Mental Performance coach Jimmy Van Ostrand, Special Olympics Texas Area Director Sarita Porter, and Bill Overton, a Special Olympics athlete who works at Whataburger Field. And a big thanks to you, the listener, for joining us this week. For Michael Coffin, JD Davis, Amy Johnson, and all of us at the Hooks, I'm Dan Reiner, and we hope you'll tune in next week for another episode of the Hooks Baseball Podcast.